It occurs to me that I have maybe a weird relationship with email and spam.
Yeah. Wait, well, email I get, but how could anybody's relationship with spam be anything but unequivocally positive? I mean, there's, you know, there's the low sodium variety. They've got jalapeno. There's like one with cheese now, I think. Like
that chorizo one is real good. And the bacon one.
There's a chorizo spam.
Oh, yeah. The chorizo spam is delicious. But the bacon spam, like a spam musubi with the bacon spam. I'm not talking about good spam, though. I'm talking about bad spam.
Oh, the unwanted spam.
So look, I got early access to Gmail in like 2003 after April Fool's when they announced it. And I signed up for my first name and my last name at gmail.com.
Okay.
And a lot of times it turns out when people don't want to. Huh? Yeah.
Okay. I just, sorry. My hackles were just raised when you said your email address out loud on this podcast, but I'm guessing email address got burned a long time ago.
It's not a secret, Brad. Okay. I mean, it was briefly, but there's no secret there. And
okay,
the volume of people who don't know who I am, who use that as a way to not be bothered with email. So I get people sign up for like vaccine notifications and their vaccine appointments, and they put my email address in because they don't want to be bothered with spam about the vaccine that they want to get so they can leave their house.
That sounds a bit counterproductive on their end, but okay.
They sign up for insurance quotes. They sign up for car sale quotes. They sign up for house evaluations for selling their house. Basically, there's some people in the world who anytime they see a form, including like the timesheet form for their job, and they don't want to be bothered with those emails, they just put in somebody random's name.
I'm making a face here. I feel like there's like, that's maybe a bit of a shotgun approach to the subject that is a little bit self-defeating. Like maybe.
It's some bad.
Some email forms are good and useful is what I'm trying to say. Like perhaps apply a little bit of critical thinking about when you should use your actual email or not. For example, when you were going to get paid.
Yeah. Well, there's a guy in Portland who signed up for cable about 10 years ago and his bills come to me.
Wow.
Same providers I had for a long time, so I couldn't filter them. It turns out if you sign up for a Walgreens account with somebody else's email address, that person can't turn off that account because they have to have the personally identifiable information in order to steal access. So like usually my strategy is when somebody signs up for an account on something that I actually want, with my email address, is I just forgot password, log into the account, and then hijack. Delete the account or change the email address, right?
Hijack the account.
It's my account. They use my email. Once they use my account, it's mine. It's mine.
Commandeer it for your own purposes. Do you ever, yeah. I mean, occasionally, once in a while, I assume other people get this, like you'll get an innocent one, right? Where somebody with the same name, like got, you know, that somebody typed the email address in with like the wrong prefix or like, you know, it fell back to you because you actually have the same name as them and they just made an innocent mistake.
Yeah. Like Will Smith in Birmingham, UK does that. He thought he was Will.Smith at Gmail for a really long time.
Right.
Turns out he's not.
Right. Like I for a while I was getting parent teacher organization emails from some school district where some parent's name had gotten put in wrong. And I was getting emails about like, oh, the PTA meeting is tonight, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, my question is, do you ever reach out and like gently say, hey, okay.
Like if it's something where it seems like somebody made an honest mistake or they like went with Will instead of William or something like that, then I'll be like, hey, I'm not the person you're looking for. But if it's some jerk who put, you know, Drake into his insurance quote, and the problem is most of the time there's no, like if it's a no reply email address, there's no way for me to let them know.
Sure.
So like if it's just spam, if it's just like I guess it's not spam, I guess it's ham at that point. But if it's just email from like a corporate entity to a customer or potential customer, there's no way for me to fix I'm going to tell you the best one I ever got.
Yes.
Well, okay. There's some uncomfortable stuff because a lot of people send racy pictures to celebrities via email, it turns out.
Wow.
Men and women. Men and women.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not where I thought this was going.
But the best one, that is not the best stuff. That stuff is always unfortunate. It's never what you want. The best stuff was when the Popeye's chicken franchise for Central Florida was sending me their customer complaint reports.
What?
So every time somebody complained about food at a Popeye's from like Orlando to the north border of Florida.
Sure. Right.
Like Ocala, I would get per franchise breakdown of the actual complaint the remedy that was taken for the customer and the post remedy action that was taken by the local franchisee.
What I don't understand is how that got shunted to you. Cause wouldn't the management actually want to see those? Like,
well, the manager's name was Will Smith and he did not want to be bothered by these.
It was one of those. All right.
Yeah. So he signed up for this. So I just replied back after a few years. They were really good. Like, people complain about anything. The shrimp were too small. The shrimp were too big. There wasn't enough breading. There was too much breading. The beans were not spicy enough. The green beans were too spicy. The gravy was too hot. The upshot is you get a free sandwich.
Yeah, I want to hear what the remediations were for these issues.
It's always a free sandwich.
Oh man, with saying there is such a thing as a free lunch.
Look, if you're willing to complain about something trivial and inconsequential, yes, you can get a free lunch from Popeyes.
See, the only thing you have to pay is your dignity.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad, I guess.
Do you have questions about your identity after the cold open?
Not real. Kind of, I guess. I'm a little confused about what we're doing here, but please continue.
I've got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
What's the collective noun for a group of cold opens, you think?
A group of cold opens.
Like, you know, like a murder of crows or a gaggle of geese.
Yeah, I mean, cold brings to mind like ice, like a freezer kind of situation, like a clump, perhaps, a clump of cold opens. Okay. Or a block of cold opens, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to go with alliteration. I was going to go like a challenge or a cavalcade.
Wow.
A chrysanthemum of cold opens.
A challenge? That sounds very British somehow.
A cornucopia of cold opens, maybe?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I mean, the cold open's like my favorite part of a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, because you don't really have to talk about anything. It's the Seinfeld of podcasting. It's just like, it's about anything and nothing.
Here's a little slice of life. You can just put your fork and knife into this and chew. Enjoy it. Love it.
Yes, it's some good meaty podcasting. It's got a gamey quality to it.
No, you don't want a gamey podcast.
No,
man.
You probably don't.
No, you want.
Some people like a little bit of gaminess, right?
Look, I like the dark meat on a podcast, but I don't want to get that spicy.
We got some pate a couple months ago.
What, fancy?
That, well, no.
Oh.
It was the gamiest thing I have ever put in my mouth. It was.
Wow, really?
Borderline inedible. We actually didn't finish it. It was.
You grew up in a part of the country where you would regularly eat game meat.
It was an inexpensive pate, I should say. It was like a grocery store. It was not a high quality product.
Is this like what you would smear on like a banh mi or something? Or like,
Yeah, sure. Like that kind of thing. Yeah. We were putting it on crackers, bread, stuff like that. But
yeah.
The aromatic quality.
Yeah.
Like it was so up in your sinuses. You know what I mean?
It just kicked you.
Like, you know, like it just tasted like the earth in meat form. Does that make sense? You know,
look,
what I mean?
I have an 8-year-old. We don't eat a lot of pate in the house these days. It's not on the list.
I get it. Anyway, that's food technology. That's what we're here to talk about, right? Processed meat, potted meat, potted meat.
Oh, man. Okay. So if we're talking about processed meat, are you a Vienna sausages? Yes or no?
Yeah, okay, here's how Vienna sausages I am.
Yeah.
Back home they were known as Vienna sausages.
Wow.
I come from some very humble country stock.
Wow, that is so
there was not a lot of culture. I mean, well, there was a culture, of course, but
there's always a culture.
Not a wide-ranging one, let's say.
Were you straight from the can, or did you like put a little mustard on and put them on a saltine?
I didn't know that my dad ate them a lot. Like kind of the older generations ate them. I didn't eat them as much.
It's a delicacy for the boomers, kind of, it turns
out. Right. Yes. Yeah. Especially, you know, the people, the ones who came before them. I think they were going straight out of the can onto a saltine cracker, I believe was the extent of the preparation.
Did you use them for fishing ever? Either what? As human and or bait food?
No.
Oh, let me tell you, a bluegill will go ham on on a chunk of Vienna sausage.
Huh. Wow. I didn't do a lot of fishing other than there's a little Huh. A little pond behind my grandparents' house that my grandpa stocked with brim and stuff like that.
Ooh.
And I did a little bit of worm fishing, but that was about it.
When I learned to scuba dive, the instructor, when we did our first lake check dive, brought cans of Vienna sausages for everybody. He was like, crack these open when we're at like 60 feet. And we cracked them open and channel catfish the size of my thigh, like leg, the whole, like the width around of my thigh came up and ate the Vienna sausages straight out of your hand.
Huh.
It was kind of amazing, but also really scary because they are big ass fish.
I might just keep the sausages for myself next time.
Yeah. I haven't had them in a long time. Did you do potted meat? We did potted meat when I was a kid.
That was sometimes. Yes. The Underwood.
Yeah.
Do you know Underwood?
Like the deviled ham. A little deviled. Yeah.
That little devil on the label brings back some memories. I'm not sure what kind of memories.
I don't know that we can get that. That seems like a product that might not be available here on the West Coast.
It's possible. Let me just type potted meats into a search engine here.
Oh, yeah.
Potted meat food product. Anytime you're dealing in food product, you know that you're high class.
Well, I mean, you say that, but like your pate is the same thing. Just tarted up.
You're right.
You know,
yes, you're right.
They don't put potted possum on the can for the pate. It's not really possum. Also
Armor.
Yeah. That's a big brand
Armor potted meat is another one. I bet you could get some potted meat around here. I would hope that Californians are not above it.
You think there's like a fancy potted meat place where you can get like the, I mean, actually I know there is cause I've been there. It's in the ferry building. The Salumery there is essentially a potted meat joint that's tarted, that's all fancied up.
Yes. Yes. They will deconstruct anything around here and sell it back to you for 100 times the price.
Awful city.
Is there anything more annoying than not having the right screwdriver you need exactly when you need it?
Oh, God.
I submit that there is not.
If you look, I have within reach of me two identical sets of security bits, like the full, the little iFixit thing with the twisties and the bendy shaft and like a bazillion different security bits. I have a set of like spinner handle, like awesome screwdrivers. And I have like an adjustable four end, like hardware store screwdriver for big stuff. I always have the right screwdriver. Oh, and I have a set of eyeglass screwdrivers.
God, you've got the full smorgasbord of bits.
Yeah, look, I don't mess around with screwdrivers.
For the record, there are about a bajillion things more annoying than not having the right screwdriver. I'm just going to say in the very narrow category of things that have annoyed me in the last 24 hours, that one's
what's
up there.
The deal?
Episode listeners.
Yes.
Who heard our patron spotlight with Twinkle Twinkie the other day.
Oh, did you do it?
No. That's why that's what I didn't have the screwdriver for.
Oh,
I pulled my old Xbox out of the closet so I could bust it open and pull out that bad clock capacitor.
Wait, it had security bits?
Except I have like a T4 and a T5 Torx and not the T10 and the T20 that are apparently required to get into that thing.
What the hell was Jay Allard thinking? I thought he was cool. He had the hoodie and the sport coat.
Dude, come on.
He seemed like a cool guy.
Come on. You saw those old pictures.
Cool people don't use security bits, man.
It was always Microsoft plaid shirt underneath. You know that.
Yeah, Dockers from the waist down, baby.
Yes, no amount of hoodie, suit jacket, and earring can ever make up for the Windows plaid.
Wow.
Anyway, I ordered a screwdriver set. Screw it. You know what? Forget it. I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to, because I've been assembling a hodgepodge for years. Does everybody go through this process?
Probably.
Like years and years of like, oh, I need that one thing. I'm going to get that. Or like, oh, this Joy-Con kit I bought came with a driver and a couple of Torx. Or actually, in that case, I think they're.
It's a tri-wing.
Tri-wing, right? But like, that's the thing. I've got just like a mishmash of crappy cheapo no-name screwdrivers and bits, and like some of them fit together and some don't. But
do you keep Allen wrenches that come with furniture?
Oh my God, I've got Brad. I don't know where any of them are, but I bet there are a dozen Allen wrenches in this house.
So that's one of the things that I've got to put on my to buy list is like I want a set of T-handle Allen wrenches that are all the sizes, all the way big to small.
Ooh.
Because I don't have like I have like Allen wrench bits, but not the actual. The T-handle ones are so good because you get so much torque on them. I have like all the security bits. I have a good set of Torx and Torx with that hole in the middle that makes them hard to do. I have an elevator
bit.
Yeah, the safety bet.
Wait, it's why would you want it to be harder? What?
Well, it's because they don't want us opening them.
I see.
It's to protect the electronics from me, which I don't approve of. You know, they call it a security bit because of that.
Okay.
Securing it from me, the purchaser.
I see. I'm guessing this will make more sense to me when I get the screwdrivers and opening things.
Well, so some of the torques, like there's the Torx, which was common. I think the automotive industry came up with that one. And then the Torx, everybody bought those. People started making them. Everybody bought them. So then somebody was like, well, what if we put a post in the middle of that hole on the screw end?
I see.
So then you can't actually put the Torx in.
I see.
It's just another layer of security that,
That's why the security bit version?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Because I think the Torx was originally supposed to be a security bit. Like that's the whole point.
Did you know the Torx is a copyrighted name? Like it's like an actual T-O-R-X is like a trademarked name. I had no idea. I thought that was just a generic.
And the Allen wrench is named after Barry Allen, the original Flash.
I guess you can patent or trademark or copyright anything, but it seems
it's a design.
Something as elemental, let's say something as fundamental as a 5 or 6-sided geometric design, maybe seems a little too generic for that to me.
Well, so you can trademark the name. They can't trademark the shape.
Okay.
I see. They can't like patent the shape of the bit. I see.
That's why you might occasionally see somebody refer to it as like a hex bit or a star bit or something like that. I see.
Well, it's like the Pentalobe that Apple started using around, I think, iPhone 4 time. Is like a 5-lobe star basically with round edges. And that was like basically what it does is it buys them a year or two where those bits are hard to get. Cause it like, you have to build up, if there's no foundries that are making those, then it takes a little while to get them in the channel. And then you see folks like iFixit have a real early lead on that. Cause they'll spend a bunch of money to make them fast and get them out to people who need to have them to open up iPhones.
What do you think is the true goal in stopping people from opening their devices? Like deep down, like not the stated goal, but like at whatever executive level, wherever the corporate decisions are actually made.
I think they just want a speed bump for chuds. Cause like they know that Samsung is going to be able to get that thing open with a drill, no matter what. Like Samsung will buy 10 phones to see what's inside the new iPhone, right? They don't care about if they destroy 8 of them. Or all of them, frankly, and they'll just drill the screws out. So you're not going to stop somebody who's like dedicated. You know, you're Ben Affleck in what was that? Was that Payback? Cash?
Ask me anything about the body of work of Ben Affleck.
Look, he was in a movie where he was a reverse engineering guy, and they locked him in a hotel room with a console, and then he came out 48 hours later and told him how the new console worked. It was amazing.
What?
Yeah, this is maybe Ben Affleck's like best role behind Jersey Girl Dad.
Ben Affleck will always be that meathead from Good Will Hunting to me, and I will never hear any different.
I see. For me, he's the meathead from the Kevin Smith movies, from Chasing Amy and anyway. So yeah, I think they just want to keep normal people from opening their stuff and either hurting themselves or causing warranty problems.
You think that's actually it? It's not a drive revenue by charging very pricey repair services, that kind of thing.
Look, here's the bad press situation for your thing is too easy to open. You know, I got a phone with a lithium polymer battery in there and I make it too easy to open. And some Yahoo pops that thing open, pops the battery, fills their house with lithium smoke. And next thing you know, it's another McDonald's coffee lawsuit where some chucklehead did something that was really damaging to them and hurt them badly. And Apple's responsible because they didn't use a security bit and they get sued. And that's what they're trying to avoid. It's the lawyers, man.
If the history of nuclear engineering has taught us anything, it's the one wrong screwdriver move, one slipped screwdriver, and everybody is in major trouble. Clogged dishwasher drain. I think that's my verdict. My final verdict after 2 months at least of a non-functional dishwasher.
Have we talked about this on the podcast before? And just like back and forth in other venues?
No, I talk about it on the Discord a little bit.
Okay.
It stopped spraying water at some point.
Yep, that'll happen.
A couple months ago. And I put off getting in there myself to try to figure out what was going on. Because what do I know about a dishwasher? B.
It's not that hard.
B, contacting the landlord, because boy, is he grumpy about fixing or replacing things that are not absolutely essential.
Look, okay, so first off, knowing what I know about homeownership now, and also the amazing amount of money that he's saving on and making on being a landlord in San Francisco,
yeah,
you should call him for the slightest thing.
I think you're probably
regardless
right.
of grumpiness.
I think you're probably right. Last I checked, we're just a hair below market value, but not really. So,
yeah. And like, if he's raising rent every year, then let him, you know, you should get a new dishwasher every time the slightest thing goes wrong.
Oh, I like the way you think.
Yeah. You can look, you're paying a premium for a small amount of living space in an expensive ass city. If you owned this place, this would be your problem. But since you don't, it's someone else's problem. And I think there's a good faith effort here where you like, you fish out whatever horrible hell stew is in the drain of the dishwasher. But then after that, I mean, there is the Rona sitch, yeah, which so changes gonna, the dynamics.
The complicating factor, yeah, to be fair, is even if he were to send a technician to take a look, do I really want random people in my house right now?
Yeah, I mean, my nightmare sitch right now is that there's like a plumbing problem that I can't fix in the house, and we have to have somebody come in and like dismantle stuff for 3 days. To repair whatever drain problem we have.
Yes. Extenuating circumstances at the moment, let's say. Anyway, we finally got around to kind of digging in there a little bit. I did a little bit of reading on the Google. Yeah. And I pulled the, I don't know what you call it, like the trap, the kind of basket that covers the drain.
Yeah, off. It's the nightmare basket is what I think of that one as. So you're supposed to clean that every week, you know. There's
standing water in there.
Yeah, that's bad.
Which I guess means that it's probably clogged. I mean, my understanding, I think to hear you tell it, even there are like what, 2-3 things that can cause the water to stop working.
So I had this exact same problem happen to my 4 or 5 year old dishwasher a few years ago. And we did the same thing where we just washed dishes by hand for like 2 months rather than deal with it.
That's exactly what we've been doing. We've been using the dishwasher as a glorified drying rack, which doing all the dishes by hand sure does take a long time.
It takes a long time. It wastes a ton of water too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yes.
So I did that and I looked it up on the internet and I called a friend of mine who's a plumber in Tennessee, and he was like, okay, or appliance repair in Tennessee. He was like, here's what it is. Probably it's one of these two things. It's either the pump or the switch that turns on the pump, or when was the last time you cleaned your dishwasher drain? And it's like, wait, there's a dishwasher drain.
My reaction. I didn't know that was meant to be cleaned manually.
Yeah. So I cleaned the dishwasher drain, that didn't fix it. And then I looked up the replacement process for the pump and the switch. And the switch, basically, in order to get to either of them, you had to pull the dishwasher all the way out, completely dismantle the entire thing, like front panel all the way off, door all the way off, all the stuff underneath it all the way out, and then tilt it up on its back. And I was like, okay, this was $1,000 dishwasher. If I buy both parts, it's $250 worth of parts. And the dishwasher is like a year out of warranty at this point. So I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to buy both things. So I have to pull it out and take it apart one time, and I'm going to replace them both. And then hopefully it's going to work. And I'm never going to know which one was broken, but I'm just going to throw them both into the electronics recycling. So I did it. It took 2 full days of cursing. I had like sheet metal cuts because they're not designed to be worked on by normal human beings. It was easily the most difficult repair. So hold on. When I talked to my friend, he was like, you should just buy a new dishwasher. That's my advice as somebody who does this for a living. It's not worth it. I was like, it can't be that bad. I'm good at taking stuff apart. He's like, I know you're good at taking stuff apart, but trust me on this. I was like, okay, whatever. I'm not spending $1,750 extra on a new dishwasher. Let's go. And yeah, it took 2 full days. It was horrible. You should just make your landlord buy a new dishwasher if it's broken.
Some things were not meant to be DIY, I suppose. What do you think is the oldest that a residential dishwasher realistically could be? Because I would say however long you think one could last is probably about how old this thing is.
Does it have a knob that clicks?
What do you mean? Like automatically, like a timer sound?
Like when you rotate it, does it make a clicking noise or is it smooth?
Yes. Yes.
That's real. That's 40 years old.
Wow. So I started to say, I bet that's why I asked how old you think one could be. Cause I started to say, I bet this is a 30-year-old dishwasher. And then I was like, there's no way any dishwasher could last for 30 years. Right.
So in the 80s, they had the clicky knobs. In the 90s, they started replacing those with like soft touch and contact buttons.
Okay. This thing is then so extremely old.
Does your landlord pay for water?
Yes.
So he's probably hosing himself by keeping this shitty old dishwasher in there.
Interesting.
It's probably burning so much water. Yeah. Like, the dishwasher is one of those appliances that I think you should replace on the reg because they get more efficient over time.
Less efficient over time?
No, more.
Wait.
No, like the new models are way more efficient than the old models.
I thought you were saying once you buy one, it becomes more efficient. The more that doesn't make sense at all.
No. So like
new models become more efficient, of course. Yes.
Yeah. We have this Bosch one that uses, it heats the tub around the edge and then it uses that heat to wick the moisture off of the thing. So there's no like heating element, which means you don't have like top rack, bottom rack issues where you put plastic on the bottom rack and it melts.
Sure.
And it is quieter and it takes a long time is the only knock against it, but it like is a dramatically better dishwashing experience, and it uses like a gallon of water per load, which is way less than you use if you're doing them by hand. So
I've taken everything you've said here to heart. Guess who's getting a phone call in the near future?
Yeah, just look, here's the thing. You're doing him a favor by encouraging him to invest in you, Brad. That's what's happening here.
I like the way you think.
Hey, Brad, speaking of things that are really old,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Lord of the Rings is 20 this year.
20? I think you mean it's just 45, like 65 years old.
I think you mean 85 years old. If you're going to go with books, weren't they pre-World War II?
No. Well, The Hobbit was pre-World War II. Lord of the Rings came out in 55, I think.
So that's 70 years.
Yes. Yes. There you
68.
Go. 68. So, yes. Something like that.
Orlando Bloom's seminal performance as Legolas, yes, the most beautiful elf.
Oh, Leggy. Yes.
Yeah. Is now 20. There was a Polygon thing yesterday where I think Chris Plant went to see Lord of the Rings in a movie theater. And I read it because I was like, man, I love going to movie theaters. Movie theaters are so good.
Yeah, they're all right.
And he was talking about the experience of being in a shared space with a bunch of randos watching a movie and everybody's having like a good time and enjoying it. I was like, this is moving me to actual tears. But also then he was like, at the end, it's like, oh, by the way, this is part of our celebration of the 20th anniversary of the release of the first Lord of the Rings movie. And I was like, wait, what? No!
I don't like it. I don't like it.
That's a current franchise.
Yep. That came out like 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like when I did the math on the 80s the other day.
And I was going to say, the Lord of the Rings came out 3 years ago in the 80s because that's when 20 years ago was.
Yeah. This is math. The math I did when my daughter was born about music is that like she has the same relationship with Nirvana that I have with the Kingston Trio.
We can't do this.
In that it's shit my dad listened to when I was in college.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Just wheel out the 8-track player.
You know, why is there no, this is actually a real question. Why isn't there a fondness for tape?
Because it's bad. Although, I mean, my understanding is the tape is, in fact, coming back in a slightly kitschy way. But
like people are making mixtapes for each other?
Not so much. I think more like, hey, you can buy this on cassette tape now if you like, because that's like the obvious evolution from the retro affection for vinyl.
Did you ever buy a single?
I did not.
Oh man.
I was more of a full album type of person.
Okay.
It was always more just like
a singles.
It was always just like, I mean, you know, the price to song ratio was pretty bad on a single, right?
Well, sometimes you get a deal. Sometimes there'd be a deal in that bin right by the cash register on the, like, I think I bought a Fat Boys single, RIP Prince Marky D, by the way.
How much did that run you?
Maybe $2. I don't know. I didn't feel like it was that expensive.
Was that on sale?
Yeah. It was in the deal bin.
Cause I feel like your kind of brand new, like hot single was like what, $4 or something?
Yeah, like a cassette. Like, look, you if you wanted
the whole album was like 10.
No, a whole album was like 15.
No way. Really?
Yeah, they were price fixing. Of course, it was expensive as hell.
Mm.
You might have had a better record store than I did. Our record store sitch was grim in Bristol.
Where did you go?
I went to, God, I can't remember. It was a place outside the, so the cheap place was outside the mall. The expensive place was inside the mall.
Okay, yeah. We had Camelot Music in the mall.
Oh, we didn't have Camelot. No. Mm. We had, God, what was it? It was called, well, okay, so there was a record, the place I bought my first CD was this record store that had been there for 100 years. It was next door to a really good sub shop. And when we would go order subs, I would go walk in and look at records. And if I had like, if I had a little bit of money, I would buy a CD. I bought two things. The first CDs I bought were U2's Joshua Tree.
Okay.
And when I was at the cash register, I was like, I told the guy who owned the joint that this was the first CD I ever bought. He was like, oh, you should get something else too. Here, let me throw this in. I'll give you this for $5. And it was the Platters' Greatest Hits.
He was looking out for, he's like, okay, you did 20 to 30 years from now. You don't want to have to say that the Joshua Tree was your first CD. Let me just help you out here. Except then he gave you the Platters' Greatest Hits.
So look, I like the Joshua Tree for a long time. I was a U2 fan.
Old U2, like 80s U2's not terrible. Like,
before they got into executive walk-on music, U2 was pretty good.
Yes.
But that Joshua Tree album was ruined for me because I drove back from Phoenix, Arizona to Knoxville with a friend of mine when I was in college, and we had to do it in one. We had a really bad hangover with the day we were supposed to leave. So we didn't leave, and we had to drive back in one shot, which is 32 hours nonstop.
Ooh.
And he had like this cool set 10 CD changer in his car, that we loaded up. We brought a whole shitload of CDs. We were ready to listen to different music the whole way back. Cause there's radio stations in that part of 40. Not good. It's real thin. And, we got going. And it was really hot because it was August in Arizona, and the wire from the head unit to the CD changer shorted out and melted in the heat. So the CD changer stopped working about 2 hours into the 32-hour drive.
Oh, no.
And the only tape that he had was YouTube's The Joshua Tree.
Oh.
So it was like that.
I'm sorry.
Or conservative talk radio. Or
it's 6-1, half a dozen of another,
or like Navajo, like native music stations.
Okay,
we listened to a lot of native music.
Boy,
and Joshua Tree.
That's absolutely the right choice of those three. I think that's the right choice.
The place we were was where the streets had no name.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. My first CD,
yeah,
the soundtrack to Wayne's World.
Party Time, excellent. Did that have Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yes, actually, okay. It did. Now that you mention it, I believe that was the first track. So, hey. And it's, halfway decent cover of Ballroom Blitz.
Shout out to Wayne's World for making Bohemian Rhapsody the A-side it deserved to be.
Yes.
Because wasn't it the B-side for We Will Rock You or something?
Oh, like maybe?
Some Super Queen hit?
Is that actually true?
I'm pretty sure it was a B-side originally.
I don't know that there's anybody older than us who listens to this podcast, but I would love to know if nobody knew what Bohemian Rhapsody was before Wayne's World.
Oh. Man, we literally did headbanging in the limo on the way to like junior prom.
Okay.
To that song.
It was a cultural thing. Yes.
Yeah, it was a moment
that really penetrated the mainstream consciousness.
Do you ever wear fingerless gloves when you type, Brad?
Oh, I'm not that cool.
Oh no, I'm not like wearing like hacker gloves. It's not like I have baller. What were those rock band things they gave us at PAX 1 year? Blitzmitts.
Blitzmitts.
Yeah,
everybody's talking like about that. Blitzmitts lately. I don't think I'm not cool enough to wear fingerless gloves in any context. Unfortunately,
I have like wool. Like glove/convertible mittens that before we could buy gloves that would work with your touchscreen phone, you could use these.
Oh, capacitive gloves.
Yeah. Well, these just have a little flap that goes over the finger bits.
Oh, I see.
So it like turns into mittens.
Oh, sure. Why would you wear these while you're typing?
Cause my hands get cold.
Wait, shouldn't that be the maximum amount of limbered and like blood flow kind of situation with your hands. Should,
look, I have circulation problems.
The action of typing, you would think would stimulate the blood flow and
You'd think that, but like, it turns out a lot of typing is sitting there staring at the screen with your hands resting on the keyboard, not doing anything.
Mm-hmm, that's fair.
I feel like maybe if my fingers were going the entire time, I'd be okay.
Just got to get some hand exercises going.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no amount of moving my fingers that makes them warm when they get cold. I have to like sit on them or put them in my armpits or something.
I suppose they call them extremities for a reason.
There was a weird thread on Twitter the other day.
You don't say.
I know, it's shocking. This one wasn't about white supremacy or anything, so that was nice.
All right.
But friend of the pod, John Drake, was talking about leaving his toaster on the counter versus putting it under the cabinets when they're done with it.
Okay.
I'm a toaster out man myself. Toaster's always out.
Out meaning it's just exposed, or like you literally pulled it out onto the counter and left it there?
Look, it's on the counter. It's ready to go. If you need something toasted, I could have it in the toaster ready to go in about 3 seconds. There's no having to plug things in.
That's how I grew up. We now, though, own a toaster sleeve of sorts. Wait,
what's a toaster sleeve?
It's like, it's just a little kind of, it's actually embroidered. It's a nice little fabric covering. They're generic for appliances. I shouldn't say
it's a cozy.
I shouldn't say it's toaster specific, but yes, we have cozies for our appliances.
What?
They're nice. They're nice little fabric coverings that go over things. You know, it keeps dust out of there and stuff.
Do you find that toaster dust is a problem?
Our toaster has to not only be pulled out, but also unsheathed before it can be used.
I don't know.
You know, we'd have to ask my cohabitant about that. I was not the one that made the purchasing decisions, nor the appliance covering decisions, but here we are.
This is not how I was expecting this one to go. I'm not going to lie.
It's actually weird walking into the kitchen because you kind of can't tell what anything is. All the appliances are covered underneath fabric coverings. So.
Well, I mean, look, if somebody breaks into your house and is trying to steal like toast to make toast on your nickel, they're not going to figure it out.
If they only have 30 seconds to figure out what to steal out of the kitchen, then, you know, they might end up with the $30 toaster. They might end up with the Vitamix. There's no telling.
Wait, the Vitamix is in a cozy too?
Yes, the Vitamix has a very large cozy.
I'm literally speechless here.
You just dress up your kitchen a little bit. What's the problem?
Are they patterns? Or like, do they have the same pattern? Are they like plain? They're
kind of a stitch. I don't know. I don't know my stitching. It might be some sort of a cross stitch pattern or something like that. Is that
flowers or something on it?
No, they're actually black. We opted for the black ones. So it's like kind of classy is what I like to call it.
Metal is what it sounds like. Are they like bats and stuff embroidered on there?
No designs. Just little cross pattern kind of.
I am fascinated by that. I've been to your house so many times, I've never noticed this.
It's a late addition, let's say.
Okay.
What's wrong with covering your plants?
No, I don't think there's any, like, look, I'm not here to kink shame. I just have questions. Do you do this on the microwave oven too?
No, certainly not. That would just be preposterous.
Okay. So the microwave oven's too big.
It's the toaster. It's the electric kettle, which we need to replace because it's kind of busted. It's the Vitamix. It's, that might be about it, actually.
Coffee grinder?
No, the coffee grinder and the coffee pot sit out. I don't know. Now that you mention it, I don't know what the rubric is for whether an appliance could cover it or not.
Seems pretty willy-nilly to me.
Yes.
Okay, so you put your toaster in a cabinet when you're not using it?
It's kind of up on a shelf where it would not be convenient. So it's under, it's basically, there's something over it that would probably not be a great idea to heat something up right underneath. So yes.
So you have to pull it all the way out and plug it in.
So yes, the toaster has to be both pulled out from the wall and then also uncovered. And it's a whole process.
How do you make a lot of toast? Do you find yourself toasting?
Given everything I've just said, maybe not as much as you would think.
I put something on the list. I don't remember what I meant now, but it's a topic of interest.
I just go with it, man. Just read the words and let them kind of sink into your brain and then see what comes out.
You got stuff you consistently mess up, even though you know you're going to mess it up. Like, I can't spell balloon, it turns out.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I always think there's one L.
I was going to say, I bet that's the common error on balloon, right? It's just a one.
Yeah. You never do 1-0. It's like millennium. It's two God. N's.
Millennium is a rough one for me. It's two L's and two N's, right? I always have to, I think like millennium and renaissance, I think, are two where I have a hard time of like, okay, millennium's got two N's, renaissance has only got one, except actually there's another one at the end, but that's not what we're talking about.
like Millennium worked out because I was working and had to do a lot of Y2K stuff. Then.
Oh, wow.
So you got good at spelling Millennium.
Yeah.
And I guess I was at ours then too. So we wrote about it a lot, but like okay. Millennium I'm okay on, but Balloon, for whatever reason, I always wanted to do one L.
There's just something about the neurons where that word is nestled in your brain is just not quite there. They don't quite fit together. Right. Mediterranean is another one for me.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Mediterranean. I have a real hard time with.
Tallahassee. That one doesn't come up that much, but it turns out it's hard to spell.
T-A-L-L-A-H-A-S-S-E-E.
Sure, let's go with it. Yeah, I think that sounds great. You're doing better than anybody from Florida would. So,
did you ever do any spelling bees?
Yep, I won one. Wow. I won the citywide one in sixth grade.
Very nice. Wow,
I got an unabridged Britannica dictionary. It's three volumes. It's in my it's in my garage.
You still have it?
It's hefty. You could kill somebody with this. It's three books and each of them weighs about 15 pounds. They're enormous.
That's really something. I was runner up in the county spelling bee in I think seventh grade.
Ooh, that's the tough one. I was in fifth grade, so it was an easier competition back then.
You know what knocked me out?
What'd you lose on?
Tariff.
Oh, one R or two R's?
I think I went with two R's and in fact it was one.
I the seventh grade spelling bee I bounced out at the end of the school level on sausage.
Really? Two S's?
I spelled it like sauce. No.
Oh, wow.
S-A-U-C-E. Huh.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, it haunted me for 40 years.
Wow. That's yes, I can see how that might stick with you.
I love sausage so much and I couldn't spell it. Do you have any like terrible games? Like I sometimes get into mobile games that I know are awful and bad for me and I can't stop playing them. Then I like get to a point where I want to break the economy and never put money into them, but keep playing the free to play game.
Oh, that kind of terrible. I was going to say, have you heard of Balan Wonderworld?
No, I have heard of it. I haven't watched anything about it yet. No, so I just know that
it's not worth talking about. It's not the so bad you have to keep playing it type of game. It's just the so bad that you shouldn't play it.
So, you know, those ads where you see the little guy and he's standing there, there's gems and water and lava and like the ad, they slide the bars so that the lava and the gems and the waterfall and you have to do it in the right order. I saw those for a long time. I was like, I like that kind of game. That looks like a fun thing. So I downloaded Ebony Online, Brad.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I've seen those ads.
Don't download Ebony Online.
What are you doing?
Look, I'm a lord now. I'm
are you titled? Are you landowning?
I have two realms. Level 23.
Have you become the landed gentry?
I've probably put 100 hours into this, but no money.
Wow.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, this is over a year, probably. I've been doing this for a long time now.
Wait, you've been harboring this foul secret for a year?
Look, I've stopped playing. I'm off of it now. I've been clean for like a month. But the bummer is that the part of that game that's interesting, the weird slide puzzles, you only get to do like one of those a level. So I've played this for 100 hours. I've only done like 20 of those.
What?
And the rest of the game is just me getting crushed by people who've put presumably thousands of dollars into this thing. Cause like you have a map and you have a little town and I have to be with my group of people and I'm in a clan or guild or whatever. But every once in a while, like my army is like hundreds of thousands strong. And every once in a while, some chud from someplace else in the world will be like, I just want to come mess up your stuff and then reset all your timers. Cause it's a timer game, of course. And they just come in with an army that's like 75 million that just blows me away.
Yep. Look, I mean, I did my time with Clash Royale. I am well acquainted with that feeling of being destroyed by somebody who paid a lot of money.
Clash Royale seemed winnable, though. Like that seemed like if you had the right strategy, you could maybe. But there's no strategy here.
On a level playing field, absolutely. But, you know, there's the part where like their archers are just stronger than your archers because they paid to level them up.
Yeah. On this, it's more volume. Like they have, you have 50,000 archers and they have 2 million archers. And you're like,
look, at the end of the day, somebody's numbers are always bigger than somebody else's numbers.
Brad, I got to ask you about something that's changed in your room over the last several months.
Go ahead.
You've had this Sin City poster behind you for a really long time, and that's a fine film, but there's this new film.
It's fine. Yes.
A new challenger has entered the fray.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You have a Revenge of the Sith poster up there behind you now, I noticed.
You might say it was the original Challenger, because I believe it's the poster I bought that frame for.
What? Where? How? I have a series of questions.
Oh, boy.
When did you get a Revenge of the Sith poster?
In 2006-ish, probably, maybe five, from the person I knew who managed a movie theater and gave me the one sheet from the movie theater that they had, so...
Which of the characters represented on this poster spoke to you in such a way that you were like, I'm going to turn this into art.
I'm trying to head you off at the pass here and say, hey,
Padme or Anakin,
Obi-Wan. It's one of those high dollar one sheets straight from the theater that people pay a lot of money for. And when I got one for free, I was like, you know what? I'll pay that. I live across the street from a frame store. I'll go buy a 40x27 frame and put this movie poster in it for this film, this major motion picture that was released to theaters. Called Star Wars Episode 3
features Anakin prominently. That's all I'm saying.
It sure does.
Look,
what do you want me to say?
This might roll back around. This might work out for you because, like, Disney's doing this thing where they release new series that retcon the bad franchise entries.
No, that Obi-Wan series is on the way. Hayden Christensen is getting his due. He's on his way back to prominence.
Yeah,
we've
got a redemption arc for him now. Finally,
I mean, you'll notice that originally. There was a regular old ass Star Wars poster in that frame.
Yeah.
Classic Star Wars. Yeah. So I bought that poster to cover up the Revenge of the Sith poster originally.
Did you literally put it on top of it?
No, it was in a tube. But
okay.
Well, to replace, I should say.
Why did you bust this shame back out,
it's
Brad?
It's really, and we're just kind of illustrating the phases of my life here where.
You seem very uncomfortable talking about this, by the way. 15 I'm sorry.
Years ago
this up.
Or so, I put it in a frame because I was like, cool, I got a poster from a movie theater. That's pretty special and exclusive. And then at some point, I was like, I'm embarrassed for that to be there. I'm going to put a different Star Wars poster up there. Now we have wrapped back around where I feel comfortable returning Revenge of the Sith to its rightful place on the wall.
What are you going to replace the Sin City with then? Like a glitter poster or something?
Nothing. Those are the two. Those are the two one sheets. Oh, you know what? I take it back. I found a Batman Begins one in the tube recently.
No, that
one also came from a theater. Apparently,
Batman Begins that came from the whiskey stash. I think if I recall.
Oh, I might have fished that out of that. Okay. Well, everybody knew everybody there. Some of those might have come from that theater originally and ended up there. I'm not sure. Or maybe they got mailed in. I don't know. Anyway,
Batman Begins is a legit good film. Like Batman Forever, I would take a Batman Forever. Batman and Robin, maybe.
I would say that this Revenge of the Sith poster has been eliciting exactly the reaction that I want.
Okay. Do people notice now that room is on camera a lot? I guess.
Oh yes, people definitely notice. People make a lot of weird assumptions about you based on the things they see about you on the internet. It turns out.
Yeah. For example, you are a well-known Star Wars fan.
If you have a Sin City poster on the wall, they probably assume that you love Sin City and not you just got that poster from a theater and you saw the movie once and thought it was fine and whatever. But it's cool to have a movie poster on the wall.
Well, look, in 2021, the shit you put behind your Zoom background is like the only form of self-expression we have left.
So I get it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to remind people, hey, there's always something more going on than meets the eye. You know?
Okay.
I don't want to give this away. Not like it's the most radically original idea ever, but what I would really like to do.
Yeah.
Is just hang two big pieces of green poster board in those frames.
Yeah.
And then I can have whatever movie posters I want.
We did that.
Did you?
Yeah. But that was the background. Wasn't that the background that they used for Screened? On the brick wall in the basement?
Did they do that?
Maybe. I feel like at some point I pulled a green framed movie poster size frame out of storage.
Shit. I should have just stolen that.
Yeah, that would have saved you a lot of time. You can get a poster board and do it in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it would be easy. I mean, the two things stopping me are like I've got a nice camera with some depth of field on it now. So like I would have to figure out how to like blur that image to match my actual blurry background. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like it would stand out. It would look really weird and unnatural if I didn't do that, which might be a little more effort.
I think that's maybe even better.
That might be a little more effort than I wanted. I guess you could eyeball it, right?
If like if the background's all like bokeh out nicely and then
and the posters
like
are
a couple of really jankily green screened in posters, that sends a real message.
It's actually maybe that's not the worst idea. The other thing is like, you know, when you're in the room, when you're not streaming, like it's kind of an eyesore. Like it's not the nicest thing to look at.
We got to get the AR glasses.
Oh, I see. Okay. Just never not be chroma keying is what you're saying. Should we explain what this was at the end, just in case people didn't get it?
I think that's probably wise.
Okay.
I think we should. I think we're doing that right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Here we are.
Hey, so we wanted to do something fun and goofy, and also this week has been really challenging for reasons that we don't need to get into for both of us. We just did Oops All Cold Opens. I hope you enjoyed.
Which I had originally planned to make the title of this episode. We'll see by the time this goes out what it's actually called.
I think you seem to think
that springing this on people was a better idea.
You do or don't?
No, I don't know. I'm undecided.
We'll find out. I think we only get a chance to spring it on them once. Now they'll be expecting it. So
yeah, I'm torn on whether this was a successful experiment or not.
Well, let us know in the emails. The email address is techpod@content.town or in the Discord if you're a TechPod premium Patreon member.
Yes, yes. I hope it goes without saying, but we always want to know what people think of stuff. Like it's always nice to know if you don't like something, so we don't do it again.
Yeah. Please let us know if you thought this was stupid or bad and we won't do it again. I mean, like if one person complains, probably we'll do it again. But if a bazillion people complain, we'll take that under advisement.
We'll take the temperature.
Yeah. But yeah, I think what did we decide the collective noun was? Challenge?
A challenge of cold open? I don't know about that. I thought a block. No, chrysanthemum. Block's a little too generic. Chrysanthemum. You're just trying to get that alliteration in there, huh?
I love alliteration.
A cavalcade?
Cavalcade's pretty good. Cornucopia. Yeah.
Cornucopia.
This was a bounty of cold opens.
That's right. I guess we're done. I don't know.
Yeah. Thanks. thanks to all of our patrons for supporting this nonsense. We appreciate you. If you want to find out how you can support the TechPod, you can by going to patreon.com/techpod. And signing up for as little as $2 a month to get access to the fabulous TechPod Discord, where you can talk about such topics as, I have a message from the TechPod Discord. That's exciting. We have like science channels, we have movie channels, we have tech channels, we have reading channels, we have coding channels, we have get like job stuff channels now, which is turns out that's maybe useful. Yeah. I don't know. There's just a bunch of good places to chat with smart people about things that you don't normally get to talk to people about my experience.
You know, one thing that's fun about it is if you have a wide range of interests, you just kind of find yourself drifting from channel to channel over time. It's like, you know, for about a month, I was spending a bunch of time in the Mr. Channel. And like now I'm like for a bit, I was doing a lot of Linux stuff. So I was in there a lot. And now I'm like doing network stuff and PCs. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's just like you kind of mix it up with different crowds. Yeah, grace on all the fine fields of content that we have on offer.
Yeah, we also just posted our April, March. Is it March? Yeah, it was March. Now it's April.
Dude, I don't know. I don't know.
Our March patron exclusive episode, which we interviewed we did a patron spotlight with Twinkle Twinkie.
Yes.
Who is a security, computer security person who also participates in Badge Life, which means they are very good at soldering.
Yes.
We talked a lot about soldering and the things that you need to know how to do. And like that wave soldering stuff was bonkers. I didn't understand how that worked. It's really vapor, cool.
500 degree vapor.
Vaporwave.
Is discussed on that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So please, if you want to support the show, we don't take ads. So, you know, check out the Patreon at patreon.com/techpod. And it is worth mentioning we're going to rework the tiers at some point in the future. So if you want to get in at that $2 level, you'll be locked in forever if you sign up at that point now, and you'll get access to the Discord, which I think that tier is going to change soon. So thank you, and as always, we want to thank our executive producer level patrons, as well as everyone, but especially our executive producer level patrons, the Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chappell, and James Kamick. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
I guess that'll do it for us.
Yeah,
we do like 17 cold outs now, think?
I guess. I don't know. How does this work? Play the music again. Take us out.
See you all next week. Bye. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
Wait, hang on. I thought we weren't doing that.
No, I think we should do it the first time.
What?
We got to set them off. We got to trick them.
How are we going to tip our hand? I got a setup.
You're
the one that wanted to throw a smoke screen over this bizarre experience.
No. Look, this is going to be good.
Okay. Well, does that mean I should restart the timer? What are we doing here?
Restart the timer.
Have I ruined this?
No. I'm just going to cut this out.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought this was going in.
No, this isn't a bit. This is, no.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.